treat people how you want to be treated. I think that's really what our consumers are asking of us right now. And the brands that rise to the occasion are the ones that are going to come out on top.
SMS marketing is the breakout channel of 2021. But there is a lot of unknowns on how to navigate this channel. Most brands don't even have an SMS channel. Is it the same as email? There are so many questions to SMS, but not a lot of answers until today. Welcome to How to Market Your D2C Brand, a show where we interview founders and marketers in the D2C space to learn about how they have grown their brands and current best practices in marketing. This show is brought to you by Godot Studios, a photo and creation studio that works with consumer brands to make content that converts viewers into customers. I'm your host, Matthew Gattozzi. Today's guest is Stephanie Griffith, an email and SMS marketer who works with many brands, founder of emailpreview.io, and is the host of the podcast Conversational Commerce. I wanted to start off the interview understanding the difference between email and SMS marketing.
So I think SMS is the hot new channel on the block. If people haven't started signing up for brands to show up on their phone, they're certainly going to be doing so really soon. So definitely, I think early adopters are going to have the advantage here. But the key difference I think that we're seeing and why maybe some brands and some marketers have been hesitant to adopt it is that SMS has this kind of inherent invasive element to it. People are like, why are you on my phone? Like, this is like breaking the fourth wall. It's like you're really getting really close and personal with your consumers. But the difference here is that folks are actually inviting that conversation to happen on their devices. So whereas email can largely get away by being an opt-out channel, meaning we still see some brands email folks that didn't consent to receive those messages. They're still out there maybe purchasing lists of subscribers, which is bad. Never do that. Just don't do it. You cannot do that for SMS. So if a brand is showing up on your phone, it should be because you very willingly and hopefully enthusiastically said, yeah, I'd like to see what your text messages are all about. So I think we're really seeing kind of the evolution of, you know, what I would like to change in terms of the lexicon of an invasive channel turning into really the most intimate marketing channel that we've seen in a long time.
Because it's such a unique channel, I think you, like you said, there's an intimacy kind of level to it and it's pretty new, right? So how do we, how do we navigate these waters of, not being too weird, but it being, resourceful and helpful for the brand? Could you go through some best practices on SMS when it comes to a brand that's just starting out? How should they get started? How should they, start thinking about SMS as a marketing channel?
Totally. So I'll definitely unpack a couple of additional differences too, because I think the risk that we're going to see is folks thinking they can just take maybe what they're doing in email and kind of carbon copy that over to SMS. And I'd say that is the first thing we don't want to do. And we do want to respect the inherent differences in the channels. So even though there might be kind of this natural extension of an audience building in email, some of the messaging, the tone, even some of the imagery that we might see, what we don't want to do is treat them exactly the same, because that's where we're going to run, I think, into some issues there. And so I'm going to do like anti-best practices first, I think.
I love that.
Yeah, we're going to start with anti-best practices. Another thing I've started talking about is something I like to call the frequency paradox. And it's really easy to send a lot of communications through email these days and not have it feel like too much. So many brands are sending more and more and more emails. And I think consumers have gotten relatively used to that, but they've also gotten used to ignoring them. So it's so easy to send, to be a daily sender as a brand and not have even, one or two of your emails opened in a week if you're sending every day. If you do that for SMS, it's going to feel like a lot. So there's definitely brands I've signed up for. And, I think it's become pretty typical to get, a promotional message if you're signing up through an overlay that's like, hey, sign up for texts and get, here's this incentive to do so. We want to make sure we get you on your way, get you shopping, complete that purchase. I would definitely expect that first communication to be promotional. Sometimes we're seeing a very quick follow-up, encouraging folks to save a contact card, but then brands kind of take a step back for a little bit. They want to like let you do your thing, kind of get familiar, get comfortable with the fact that they're sending you text messages. some folks will invite you to, you know, reply to them and kind of engage in conversation. But otherwise, we're really seeing a little bit of a pause there. And I think that's the key. You need to create some space. If you just go in full send and you start like stage five clinger, like next level, like, hey, you up? You know, did you get this last message? Are you still there? That's where we're really going to see people be like, whoa, get off my phone. This is not what I thought I was signing up for. So I really think that we need to see in terms of here's a positive best practice, less is more. The key to SMS is that less is more. We really shouldn't be communicating and showing up on people's personal devices unless we have something important or valuable to say. Again, email, it's really easy to get away with, you know, sending out things that might not be super important to the user, but feel important to us as the brand or the marketer. But I think it's really hard to get away with that on the SMS side, because if you send some, you know, what seemingly useless text message, you're like, why was I bothered? Why did I have to, you know, this is a distraction. This isn't adding value to me. So it really has to be all about the end user. In terms of making sure they're finding those communications useful and not invasive and not intrusive. So I think that's definitely a key factor there. And then I also would be remiss if I did not talk pretty explicitly about consent. So again, that main difference, you know, between SMS and email is that we're really having to put consent at the forefront when it comes to SMS. There's a couple of key reasons here. The unsexy and boring one is legal requirements. There's something called the TCPA, kind of comparable to CAN spam, except much more stringent and rigorous in terms of their guidelines. And it very, very clearly outlines, hey, you have to be capturing very explicit consent in order to send these communications. So brands should make sure they're being, you know, super clear and upfront and just flat out say, and you could be pretty cutesy about it, but you can be like, do you want texts from us? Like, hey, can we have your number? And make it really clear what folks are signing up to receive, so there's no confusion, because there can be, you know, heavy penalties there, things like that. You can't really skirt the edges of consent the same way we can on the email side. So consent is key. Yes means yes. Pretty easy concept. And then for SMS, we don't say unsubscribe. It's stop means stop. So if you can wrap your head around consent and best practices there, you'll be an okay SMS marketer.
I feel like we're on like a dating show right now. It's like, but seeing more brands getting into SMS, what are some like best ways to actually get people to opt in?
SMS is one of the most human marketing channels we've seen in a long time, even above and beyond social media marketing. Social really got pushed super heavily. Even organic has started to look like ads because we've tried so hard to make paid media not look like ads. So I think that there really is this just inherent nature of like, you're selling to me. It's not a conversation. You're talking at your, you know, your customers or your subscribers rather than inviting them into that conversation. Whereas SMS is where, you know, we're on our phones. We're having conversations on our phones peer to peer as humans. So now brands are trying to find, you know, that delicate way to kind of insert themselves into that part of our lives. So they do have to dance around that, you know, very carefully. And so to your more specific question about how do we do that? How do we do that as marketers? How do we do that as, you know, on the brand side? How do we get people to want us to be on their phones? Step one is just ask. So I think a lot of folks are only now realizing that that's an option. So if you give folks the option and they self-select into wanting communications on that channel, that gives you a pretty good indicator that that's where they want to hear from you. So step one, whether it's a pop-up or, you know, more nuanced ways of asking, give people the option. Just start capturing, you know, phone numbers and say, do you want to hear from us on your phone? And I think a key differentiator there where it can break off from email. So the standard approach we're still seeing is, like you said, hey, do you want 10% off your first purchase? Hey, do you want to unlock, you know, an exclusive offer by signing up for texts? We're still kind of seeing a lot of that. We're copying over from how we get people to sign up for email. But where I really like to see brands kind of shine here is taking a much more exclusive approach. So why should I care? You know, why should I give you my phone number? That feels like a next level piece of data. It is more personal. So why should I give that up? And I think where we're seeing the sweet spot there is brands that are making it feel really exclusive, really VIP, and like I'm signing up to some secret club. Like, I want to be like totally on the inside. You know, I want to be part of the cool kids. I want to be in the know. I want to be the first to know. So I think brands that really position SMS as, you know, it's an exclusive channel. We're not going to talk to you all the time. We're really just going to tell you need to know or, you know, exciting information are the brands that are going to build kind of the best loyalty with their subscribers. But also a lot of brands have really loyal email followings. So I would recommend start there. If you just want to see who you can get to sign up, you know, across both channels, send out an email that's like, hey, do you also want to hear from us, you know, via text? I would caution using the term SMS, like that's not super consumer friendly. We talk about it as marketers, like, you know, we totally understand what it is.
Right.
When you're like, hey, do you want to sign up for our SMS program? A lot of people are like, you're what?
They're like iMessage?
Yeah, it's like the what? So just make it really clear, like, hey, we want to text you. And here's why we think that's valuable. You will see brands incentivize that with offers, and that's perfectly fine if it's, you know, part of their promotional strategy. But I'm seeing some brands kind of break the mold and be like, hey, you know, here's a good example, Olipop. I'm probably going to talk about them a lot. I think they were a really early adopter and leader in how to use SMS right. If anything, I actually think they could send a little bit more because I like our text messages so much that I'm like, hit me up, you know, a couple times a month. Don't make me wait a whole, right, you know, weeks. But they have positioned themselves as launching brand new, you know, limited edition flavors first through SMS. So if you want first access, like you don't want to worry about a flavor selling out, that's the program that you need to sign up on. And they're very good at honoring that. They might tease it through email. Sometimes I think they send like a hype message like a week prior, like, hey, this is coming. You should get ready, but we're going to be, you know, we'll tell you first because you're an SMS subscriber. And I really, really like that approach. I think it honors that exclusive feel, the need to know information. It gets me excited for when I get communications from them because I'm like, ooh, is there any flavor coming? They're also good about kind of sending out cute updates from their founders and also employees there. So it feels really personal and really exclusive, and like they're trying to build this relationship with me. So I definitely say that that's, you know, another key best practice as well. We'll sprinkle those throughout here. It all comes back to building out that relationship. So we've got some themes, the human kind of element and how we're navigating these new waters of wanting to build human connections between brands and customers. And I think, again, SMS is the perfect place to do that. So if we treat it like building a relationship, we ask permission before we communicate with someone, and then we really honor, you know, that new connection that we have, that's where we're going to see brands succeed. And that's how I think we'll build trust in that channel.
Stephanie touched upon this idea of brands building connections with customers through conversations. Messaging the consumer is a new sales channel that is emerging. I wanted Stephanie to explain conversational commerce and how this can look for D2C brands when it comes to SMS.
We've seen a lot of folks using this word. Postscript kind of drops it, and they specifically, as an SMS platform and provider, kind of, you know, preach the gospel of conversational commerce, but I don't think we ever really slow down to be like, what is that? So such a good question. But I think really what we're seeing is that the technology is finally available to really put the power of communication with our favorite brands in the consumer's hands. Like we can literally hold our devices and talk to them. And I know some folks, you know, especially since I have a strong email background, love email. It definitely, you know, has a time and a place. We've long wanted that to be this two-way, one-to-one, you know, hyper-personalized channel. And while I think some brands who have, you know, great resources, great data to leverage, and a lot of trust with their consumers have kind of, you know, scratched the surface there, SMS just like has broken all the molds. Like all of what we've been trying to do for email, where it's still really hard to do some of those things, is now so, so, so easy through SMS. And so conversational commerce is really taking advantage of those new communication channels we have. And it's not just SMS. I'm going to talk most about that because I practice it, preach it. I work with brands on it. But this also spreads to other apps. WhatsApp is really popular, especially internationally. So again, another messaging communication service that brands can leverage. Chat, like Facebook and, you know, social media chat. I believe Instagram DMs are launching, yep, where you can actually automate, yep, some communications and customer support through your Instagram DMs. So we're seeing this really explode. And if we haven't seen some of, you know, those other channels I've mentioned take off the way that SMS is, I'm pretty confident that we will. You know, truly the way that consumers are engaging with brands is fast becoming identical to how they're talking to their friends. You know, how we're having these conversations, we're looking for more of those ways to connect, build relationships, and actually be able to really engage with brands in that kind of two bi-directional way. It's not just brands talking at consumers, it's brands asking their consumers to talk back for the first time in a long while. And it's pretty cool to think, like, I can sit here and I do this. I sign up for brands programs. So fair warning to any founders or DTC brands watching, I am signing up. I am replying, especially if I'm invited to reply, whether that's through keywords or they're just like, hey, if you want to talk to a real person, text us back. I'm typically doing that to see, like, is there someone on the other side of this? And we're going to see a lot of regular consumers do that too. They're going to text you funny things. They're going to late night drunk text you by accident. Seeing some of the responses that come through are very human. But I think where things can get tricky is if you say, hey, talk to us. Like, we're here. We want to hear these responses. And you don't have someone on, you know, the receiving end of that or ready to respond. That's where some of that trust can be kind of eroded. So truly make it conversational. If we're going to adopt that mantra, like, we have to practice what we preach and really invite that conversation in from our consumers and then be ready to show up and have the conversation. Don't just let them, you know, kind of say, hey, are you there? And then not have an automation, you know, prepared to send some sort of thoughtful response. Or even better yet, have your customer experience and customer support teams on standby when appropriate, you know, to respond to meaningful conversations when they come up.
I know you talked about Olipop, but I know there's some other really cool companies doing some SMS. So could you give some examples of, like, other people that are just killing it right now for people to kind of look out and see what they're doing?
Yeah. I'm going to touch on Olipop one more time. So again, early adopter there. If you haven't signed up for Olipop's SMS, I get $0 to say this. I but really, they're
they can such sponsor a good, the podcast. Come on.
Oh my gosh. Yes. At least get some free sodas up in here. So anyway, they're a great example. I think they really practice kind of, they embody a lot of the best practices there with SMS. And they're very tasteful in when they send, how often they send. But a big differentiator for them as well is not only are they, you know, launching new flavors through that channel, getting people, you know, to get super hyped about those limited edition launches, they're also largely managing subscriptions through text messages. So through their SMS provider, they're on PostScript, you can totally manage through replies like, hey, I want to skip this month, or hey, I want to, you know, add this or change that. I don't want to overspeak on the technical capabilities, but I know that that is, like, has been so well received that it's like, oh crap, how annoying is it to have to, like, go online, log in, remember to change your account information or skip or cancel a month for various subscriptions that we've all found ourselves part of in the DTC realm. So it's so much easier if I can just get a text message and be like, oh yeah, this, you know, my subscription's about to process. Do I need to make any changes? Nope, it's all good to go. Or, oh, you know, I really don't have the budget this month. Let me just reply like skip. Or, you know, I'm not loving it anymore. I'm trying out new subscriptions. I'm going to go ahead and just cancel for now. So really bringing not just that conversational element, but that convenience. SMS has the ability to make things more convenient for folks is where I think Olipop also really shines. I'll get off the Olipop train now and talk about a couple of other ones. But another brand that's kind of, I think we're seeing take off pretty quickly is Muddy Bites. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually tried them yet. I did place an order. And the reason why I want to give them a great shout is because they're really using not just email, but also SMS to communicate directly with their subscribers. And not even just customers, but their whole audience to say, hey, we had some huge delays. Like, we went, you know, we basically went viral. We couldn't keep up with the demand. So we want to be really transparent in letting you know that if you place an order, there's going to be like a, you know, maybe a 2-week delay before we can actually ship it. But how amazing that they're just willingly coming out and saying that, because they know some people are going to not buy. There could be a sales impact there that doesn't benefit them. But where we're going to see that, you know, the actual benefit come for the brand is that trust, is that transparency of like, we know that we might be losing business right now, but as a consumer, I'm so much more likely to want to give my dollars to a brand that's not desperately seeking it or trying to hide that they're having issues. So they willingly communicated and said, this is what's going on. They set realistic expectations for when they expect things to start shipping again. So I can feel confident as a consumer that they've already identified the issue. I don't have to get ready to queue up, you know, an angry email to customer support. Like, hey, I placed this order 2 weeks ago. Where are my damn money bites? So I really love that they've kind of taken that approach. Really a masterclass there on transparency, proactive communication, and alleviating those questions and those pain points for subscribers and potential customers before they happen. And also they respond. So they had sent that out and I basically wrote back and said, yeah, I tested that. I was like, let's see, like, you know, is this just a nicety or do they actually have someone on the other end? And they do. So I had just replied and said, hey, thank you so much, like, for the update. This really, you know, makes me excited to place an order when I know it's safe to do so and I'll actually get the shipment. Really looking forward to trying you guys out. And they responded and they were like, Stephanie, thanks so much. Like, we also can't wait for that. Like, thank you for your patience. Like, that wasn't an automated response. That was someone being like, oh, we got a nice reply to this. So we're going to go ahead and reply back. And it made me feel special. And then I placed an order. So they got the sale either way. I think they're really practicing what they preach there. Keep an eye on Money Bites. I've got two more, but I'll be quick. So
do it.
This one's really interesting. It's not a typical brand. They're not a DTC seller, if you will, but there's a grocery rewards program that got pretty big on Twitter pretty quickly called Aisle. TextAisle.com is, I believe, how you can get to it. And it's an all SMS, so all text powered grocery receipt rewards program. So they are partnering with a lot of these DTC brands, but we're also seeing, you know, some of these food products show up in normal grocers now who are clearly trying to move inventory, you know, expand distribution. And so they're like, hey, we're going to go ahead and promote these brands, some of which you can purchase online. Otherwise, we're like, we want you to go into your local grocery store and find these brands, purchase them. And then there's incentives for cash back based on the brands that you've bought. So Olipop's on there. There was some ridiculous, like $1.50 back per can. Most grocery stores have them for $3, $2.50. I mean, that's a steal. So I'm like, let me go to my Whole Foods or my Sprouts, get a couple cans of Olipop. And then all I have to do is take a picture of that receipt and text it to TextAisle. And then they Venmo me cash back. And it's real. Because I was very skeptical. I was like, am I going to get my money? How long is this going to take? Is this going to be weird? No, it's pretty seamless. And the reason why I think they're so different is their copy really feels like you're talking to someone. It's as a marketer, I can spoil this a little bit. It's not a person the whole time, but they do also have real people behind the scenes there. But even just their conversational sign up, it's like a faux, like, text messaging experience where they're like, hey, can we have your name? It's really fluid. To like the unsuspecting consumer, it's probably going to feel really real and really natural. It's one of the sharpest and most unique use cases I've seen. So if you want a really fun, like, outlandish kind of copy experience, but also cash back for groceries, definitely check out TextAisle. And then the only other ones I'll shout out here, just in the sake of time, are two beauty brands who I think are crushing it, and they've been on the SMS train, I think, earlier as well. And so I think we're really starting to see them follow and set some of these best practice examples. And those two brands are Aisling Organics and Three Ships Beauty. And they're very good at prioritizing skincare education and encouraging subscribers to respond and talk to a real person. So both of them are like, hey, do you want to hear from our CEO? Do you want some skincare tips? Do you want more about our story? Or do you just want to hear from, you know, a real human? Go ahead and text us back. And so that's a great example of where we're seeing brands invite that conversation and not just, like, again, talk at their customers. So I'm really excited to see what they continue to do.
Customer data and privacy has been on the headlines for most of 2021 with iOS 14.5 and iOS 15. But as we branch into more intimate sales channels like SMS, trust with the consumer is more important than ever before.
Brands are still navigating the new normal with data and privacy, and I wanted to know how Stephanie is adapting to the changes.
Oh, that's a great question. This is sort of a joke, but not really. Pivoting to SMS first. So I really do have a brand that is seeing such success on the SMS side that we are largely kind of adjusting our marketing efforts to prioritize SMS because it's fast. We can get really good learnings there. And then going back and taking a look at email and saying, okay, what did we learn here? Is there actually anything that we can translate the other way? So sort of a joke, but sort of not. But really what you've touched on is key with building that trust. I think trust has been lost. I don't think that's a reach to say anymore. Consumers know that we have tons and tons and tons of data on them. It's largely anonymized. I think the issue there is like the way some of these bigger technology companies are making it sound like, I know that you, Matt, are like sitting exactly in that chair and, you know, you said this word. And so there's voice search capability. It's not quite, it's really not that creepy, but consumers don't know that. And we cannot expect them to understand what is largely our job. So I think what we're seeing is that trust has been broken and technology companies are starting to back their consumers and say, hey, we want you to trust our products, and it's going to make our jobs as marketers a little bit harder, but ultimately it's what our consumers want. So we sit here and we say, like, you know, we want to send the right message at the right time to the right person, and we want to give subscribers what they want. But as soon as we're challenged because our job gets a little bit harder, we're like, but not that way. So I think that's what we're seeing there is really we're having to practice what we preach, and consumers are asking us to treat them how we want to be treated. We're consumers too. I hate, you know, certain ads. I don't engage with every email that I receive. I certainly know, you know, the emails that are trying to be more personalized and really leveraging the data that they have versus, you know, senders that are not doing that. And so we're in this position of having to just sit back and listen for a minute and say, okay, consumers don't want us to track them anymore. We're moving towards a largely trackless future. So we're going to have to get creative. So that's really step one in navigating this is like, take a breath and just be like, we're smart. We have these jobs for a reason, but we also just need to respect what's being asked of us and get a little bit more creative in how we respond. So I'm, you know, largely helping brands kind of look at what is actually changing, assessing the, you know, the significant impact there. Thankfully, for a lot of DTC brands, we do see pretty big Gmail-based audiences. Not that that fully insulates folks, but it gives us some cushioning. So we're starting by looking at where are people opening? Where are they actually opening their emails? If we're seeing a huge impact there with Apple, then of course we're going to have to take, you know, some more critical actions. The impact might be a little bit greater, but it's not going to be catastrophic. Emails are still going to be sent. They're still going to be received. They're largely going to work as effectively as they do today. I don't see that changing. So I think some folks are like, can we still send emails? Are they still going to make it where they need to go? And the answer there is yes. But I think the visibility that we're going to have into the performance of certain things is really what's going to change. So what we need to do now as marketers, and also just anyone working on the brand side, is get a really clear understanding of current engagement and purchase data. So opens as they stand today, clicks and conversions. Because that's going to be critical to really understanding what has changed when some of these, you know, tracking changes officially roll out. So we can see, was there a huge impact? Are things way up? Are things down? And have that, you know, self-benchmarking in place to check that against. I would also challenge brands, and this is what I've been working a lot on, kind of spreading the gospel on, if you will, is reevaluating how we define engagement. So opens is really is what everyone's afraid of losing with the iOS 15 changes, because it is a good indicator of, you know, did someone get this message? Did they at least open it? But what comes after? So we cannot just, you know, attach ourselves to one specific metric. I'm not going to call it a vanity metric. There is merit to how we use opens. It's used in a lot of things, but I think the vanity element comes into play when we think there's like one key indicator that we can just look at to say things are good or things are not good. And so really getting more creative there. If someone signed up, but they're not opening, they're not clicking, they're not purchasing, don't keep trying to hold on to these folks. Like, broaden that view of engagement. Make sure, you know, have a better understanding of your funnel, how people are coming in, where in the funnel they're making that purchase, and also how we get them back. So again, just much more of that 360 understanding of engagement, not tying it to any one specific metric. And then also, this is where SMS does really come into play. And also some of those other conversational channels we talked about, build up your own audiences. So email, keep building that. That doesn't need to go away. It's going to be there. People like email. But now that we have these other options that are largely, I can dare to say that they're at this point, they're fairly immune from some of these changes, because for SMS, we don't rely on opens. There's no way to see that someone got your message and they actually opened it. So when we say, hey, there's a 98% open for SMS, it's a really strongly educated guess. We can reasonably assume most people are going to see most messages. But what comes into play after that is that we can actually still track clicks. We can understand if someone actually took the next action we want them to take through that channel. So SMS is a really good litmus there of like, what happens when we can't see opens? Well, you can't see that anyway for SMS. So yeah, build up your own audiences. It's going to help you kind of diversify. So I guess we could say don't put all your eggs in the email basket or any one marketing basket, if you will. Look into these other channels. You know, give your consumers the option to sign up to hear from you where they want. And if that's SMS, if that's Instagram DMs, if it's WhatsApp, start exploring those options so you can really diversify and build out more of those conversational channels, just in case email does, you know, have a larger impact there in terms of what we can and what we cannot track. And then the last thing that I'll say there is making sure we're prioritizing capturing our customer data directly from the source. So we're losing the ability to track GOIP, so IP location, that kind of helps us make certain recommendations on the weather or, you know, your closest nearby store. If you're a retailer, some of those things are going to become really hard because we can no longer guess or make an assumption on where they're located. But again, all we have to do to get that information is ask for it. Listen to your customers and say, hey, you know, can we have this information? Maybe be really clear about what you're using it for. Like, we would love to be able to show you your nearest store. You know, can we have your zip code or whatever that is? And of course, as long as you're getting purchase information and billing address information, that data always negates or is always more powerful than assumed GOIP anyway. So a lot of those changes aren't as big as we think, but start getting comfortable asking for that information directly and not trying to hide how you found it. It's going to build trust. You're going to have better data to leverage anyway. And then we can still make things as personalized as we want to for the receiving, the user on the receiving end.
I want to finish out the interview with a few quick fire questions we ask all of our people that we interview. And so the first one is, what is a tech company in the e-commerce space that you've been excited about or, you know, you want to give a shout out because you really like working with them or using them?
Yeah. So this one I haven't actually gotten to use yet, but I'm going to shout them out anyway because I like what they're doing and I hope I get a chance to use them. And that's Octane AI. And the reason why I am much more kind of in tune with what they're doing now is as soon as a lot of the conversations around iOS 15 came out, they made, and maybe they were already working on this. And if they were, the timing was excellent. I like to think they started doing this because of hearing these changes. And their whole thing is to focus on conversational pop-ups. So Octane AI is like a survey and kind of online quiz company. A lot of skincare brands have used them, or brands where like you really need to kind of guide your consumer down what might be the best product for them. If someone's like, ugh, you know, I don't know what product to use, like, you can use Octane AI to say like, well, let's talk about your skin concerns, and then really kind of funnel folks down where they need to be. But they've made a very big statement of saying like, we want to prioritize allowing brands to capture zero party data. So that's that data that we get directly from consumers. It's not from them landing on another website. It's not us guessing. It's them self-selecting and telling us through progressive profiling the information that they want us to have so we can give them a better experience. And they're specifically talking about this as conversational pop-ups. So not just flyouts and like, give us your email, give us your phone number. It's asking a lot of those questions up front. to make sure we're getting the highest quality, you know, subscribers to sign up for both email and SMS on the end of that experience. And then as marketers, as long as we live up to using the data that they're giving us, we should be able to provide an all around better experience. So I love what they're doing. I hope I can find a time to bring them into the mix for at least one of my clients. So yeah, Octane AI, conversational pop-ups. I think they've really kind of hit the nail on the head there.
So what is a brand, that DC brand, consumer brands that you have been a fan of? And it doesn't have to be on the marketing side. It could just be, man, these flavors are just fire. So like, what's something that you are just excited about recently?
Oh, I mean, I've already talked about Olipop. So I'll just list a handful that I really enjoy.
Sure, go for it.
Olipop is fantastic. I'm not a huge soda drinker. Big fan of Olipop. Every time they come out with a new flavor, I'm just like, oh my gosh, it's so good. Still need to order the grape and add it to my mix. So Olipop's a great one. And then a brand that I've been a customer of for, gosh, 8, maybe 9 years now. They actually started out as a men's lifestyle subscription company. And I used to be obsessed with subscription boxes in particular. So I used to try so many of them. And they all had really good like incentives to get, you know, 50% off your first box or like your first box free. So I signed up way back in college because they would also have like really good kitchenware, housewares. The copy was very masculine. It was like, you know, the best damn subscription box for men who give a damn or something like that. And I'm like, hey, I can buy these products too. Middle finger to the man. But to their credit, their copy has become incredibly inclusive. So they're no longer positioning themselves as like just for men. They have a whole women's section, especially around the holidays, because they're trying to encourage their male audience base, you know, to buy for females in their life, whether that's a significant other, family members, relatives, things like that. And the value that, like, the price to value ratio for their subscription, in my opinion, has yet to be matched. I have so many home goods from them, so many great kitchenwares. I've been introduced to new brands through them. So as far as like a DTC subscription kind of marketplace brand goes, Bespoke Post, they are awesome. And then a brand that I haven't tried yet, but I keep getting ready to kind of pull the trigger on, specifically because of their text messages, is Sniff, S-N-I-F. And they are a DTC like perfume company. And they kind of bill themselves as being really gender neutral in terms of the scent profiles. But you can basically get a sampler set sent to you of the different fragrances that they have. And then you only pay for what you keep. And if you don't love them, you know, you can send them back because they understand you have to be able to smell fragrance in order to want to keep it. You have to try it. So it's like a try before you keep it fragrance company, and their scent profiles sound amazing. They send really beautiful and compelling imagery out all to my phone. And so I signed up for their SMS program first. And I think I only recently noticed emails actually coming as a part of that. So they've really prioritized their SMS communications, and it's I'm days away from ordering from them.
I finish off the podcast with a segment called Open Mic. This is a chance for my guests to share anything that they want. A lot of times I feel like people get stuck behind the industry that they're in. We're all humans and we have different interests. So this is a space for our guests to say whatever they want to say.
Oh, you're so kind. I love it. I think I'm going to stay kind of within the realm that we've been touching on, where marketing really has come to this crossroads of needing to be human. And that's what gets me most excited as a marketer, is how do we, you know, kind of create these really personal interactions so our customers feel special. They don't just feel, you know, like a transaction. And it feels more conversational. So I think what we're really seeing or trying to achieve is the switch from transactional commerce and also retail. I don't want to exclude retail from this, to conversational commerce. Like, we're really trying to make it feel more personalized. And it's that human aspect. So I think it's fair to call it dating, in a playful way, but more importantly, really looking for these ways to build relationships with our consumers and looking to brands to kind of navigate some of these hard times in terms of the technology changes that we're all facing. This is not a time to be afraid of them or think that it's going to derail us as marketers or it's going to, you know, ruin brands. Consumers are still here to shop. Like, there are so many brands. There's so many cool products. My bank account tells me that I am still purchasing from all of them. So that's not going to change. But I think the brands that are going to come out ahead are the ones that are looking for those creative opportunities to build relationships and keep people excited about the channels that we get to communicate with them on. So I don't know. I don't have a perfect way to like wrap that up, but I would say treat people how you want to be treated. I think that's really what our consumers are asking of us right now. And the brands that rise to the occasion are the ones that are going to come out on top.
This conversation with Stephanie helped me understand the power of conversational commerce, as well as how to utilize SMS as a marketing and sales channel. You can follow Stephanie on Twitter at D2C Queen. We will also put information about Stephanie's work in the show notes down below. Thank you, Stephanie, for being on the show. If you like this show, drop a rating on Apple Podcasts or your podcast listening app. And if you really love this show, please share this episode with a friend. You can check us out on YouTube to see the whole video podcast. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.